The I knew that the radio was dead on that T-39, but I didn't know about the other attempts to get the plane down. You never know the truth on any of those things, as far as I'm concerned. But, we have 707 jets flying to the States here to McGuire now, so maybe by the time I go home, I'll be able to get a 707 right from here. Everyone says I should try to take a ship home, luxury ship. But, you know, I've had sea duty, and to me, a luxury trip doesn't mean that much. I don't have that terrible need. Besides, it's very expensive. It costs you quite a bit a day in tips, and you don't get reimbursed for that. And it just doesn't appeal to me. And crossing in December or January or whenever it will be doesn't strike my fancy one single bit. Anyhow, here I wasn't going to talk much, but I guess I'll make two sides anyway. To continue. You were mentioned about Princess Irene of the Netherlands and Prince Hugh Carlos. I think I mentioned something about him on one of the other tapes. I don't know too much about him. And as yet, I don't know anything about the Spanish viewpoint on the marriage. I think it's probably pretty understandable why the Netherlands are not particularly anxious for a Spanish alliance. Outside of religion, I think religion is one reason, of course, but they have a very large Catholic population. But I think the other reason is that Holland won its independence from Spain, or from this Bourbon or Bourbon family, of which this Hugh Carlos, or Carlos as they call him here, is a member. So I think that sentiment rides high along those lines. And because I think it was the William of Orange that defeated the Bourbons, or I think anyway, I'm not too sure about my history. So that's one reason, and it was said that there were certain difficulties which had to be overcome. Now, I don't know what they were, and I guess you'll think I'm very cynical, but I want to tell you this. In Spain, a Spanish man does not marry a woman without money. Now, this is almost to a T. It really it is. There are many attractive women who are from very good families and who are very lovely, but they do not have any money, and they cannot find suitable marriages for them. This may have been one of the things that Carlos and love and all that business is all is fine talk over here. And you know, they did say in the paper that all the world loves a lover, and Holland is happy for her, and Spain's happy for her. But I'm sure there had to be a financial arrangement before there was any engagement announced. I think I'm sure that the family of Carlos insisted that there would be some. If she was renouncing the throne and all this business, then there would be some financial recompense, and probably the Dutch government will find themselves giving a very large dowry. Now, I know that the Greeks were furious at the Greek queen because they gave Juan Carlos such a large dowry, and the people were very upset. But this is Spain, and this is it, and this is the way it goes, and they're not changing, not for... not for anybody. And I never realized how much this meant in Spanish life. I mean, as far as marriages were concerned, that they're among the high class particularly, it's an arrangement of money. And so I'm sure that the Netherlands will have to fork over something to Spain before they can actually get married. And Franco has been informed, so if he has told him it's all right, then I guess it's okay. I wouldn't live in that kind of a life, you know? We're really lucky when you stop and think of it. It's an education, as I say. You know, everybody talks about this. Before, when she said she wasn't marrying him, everybody said, well, he must have jilted her, or they mustn't have had the money settlement or something, you know? Well, even in Ireland, in the western part, if you don't have a dowry, it might not be very much, but if you don't have a dowry, that's it. I mean, it might be only $20, $30, $40, but you have to have something. I suppose. suppose it's more than $40 now. So, I guess that, and speaking of that, you know, I read a book about Ireland recently, and about the amount of money it cost to go from Cove, which was, I guess it was Queenstown then, to the United States, and that they had to carry their own food and everything, and around the time that they were coming and all. And I read about, I forget how much it cost, but it cost about $25 or something like that. And I remember Aunt Josie saying that she had sent a money order to Margaret O'Neill for $40. And that really was quite a bit of money. You know, I mean, your Uncle Tom Pop was very generous because he not only was pying her, he was giving her extra food because, I mean, how they fed them and everything, it was a pathetic thing. Of course, I think the book is a little bit colored. Bob Considine wrote it, and it's good, but, gee, you know, it takes the Irish in America, that's it, and it's very good, and it's well done, but I think it's probably a little emotionalism in it. But, as we said before, and as we're forever saying, you say about the United States at least can admit when they make a mistake, at least, as I've said so many times, you can say that the country is wrong and not a risk being considered un-American. And as I say, you just can't do that in Europe, and that's something that they, well, I guess you could do it in Ireland, and I guess you could do it in England, because they have governments quite similar to ours, but the rest of Europe, nope. So, I don't know. I should send home a tour guide book for you, Alice, on Russia and the satellites. I don't know if I'll get a chance to send it, though, but because I think I only have one. But in it, it says, it describes about what you'll see when you go to Russia, and you have a tour of an elementary school or a tour of a factory or a tour of a hospital. You know, I mean, most places you go to, you see things like, well, the views and the sights, but over there, I guess it's entirely different. Well, it's coming close to the end of the tape now.